Welcome into Uncovering Success. My name is Brady Slaybaugh. I hope everyone had an awesome weekend. I know for me, it feels good to be back at church and in person consistently. Shout out Pastor Chad Fisher from Rock City. What he has done in Columbus is nothing short of extraordinary. His ability to create a safe place to hear a dangerous message, a controversial message, is something incredible. So my guest today comes from Meigs County in Pomeroy, Ohio, down on the river, the heart of Appalachian, Ohio. So Chase Jenkins went to Ohio University and is only 24 years old. He started a health club slash gym alongside his wife Maddie in one of the poorest, unhealthiest areas in the state or even the country. On today's podcast, we walk through the struggles he's had in getting open and where they're at today, just a few years later. But the health club wasn't enough. They are in the process of launching two more companies that, just from getting to know him, are going to absolutely thrive. So enough talking, enough hearing from me. Let's get into it.
You don't set out to build a wall. You don't say, I'm going to build the biggest, baddest, greatest wall that's ever been built. You don't start there. You say, I'm going to lay this brick as perfectly as a brick can be laid. There will not be one brick on the face of the earth that's going to be laid better than this brick that I'm going to lay in this next 10 minutes. Yeah. And you do that every single day.
And soon you have a wall.
Welcome into the show, Chase Jenkins. I'm super excited for today. I know you've got an awesome story. We've been connected through some mutual friends, and I'm definitely looking forward to getting into it. I know kind of what you're doing down there is awesome, and I'm excited for you to get a chance to tell that story and your plans for the future. So welcome in. You want to introduce yourself a little?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Always excited to come in and spread a little knowledge or wisdom, what little bit I do have about entrepreneurship and leadership. And but yeah, I have my own health club down a little corner of the state, right on the river in Ohio, in Pomeroy, Ohio. My wife just started an e-com business, so we just made the big step of being not just one stable income and one entrepreneur, but both of us doing our own thing. So kind of crazy times right now, but also getting ready to launch a marketing agency. So our health club is pretty much running and going on its own and outgrown us, and we're branching out hopefully to help other businesses do what we've done, especially some of the places in rural counties and you know, a lot of the mom and pop places that are doing pretty good, have great products, have great services, and maybe need a little extra help. So but yeah, my passion is just to help people, man, whatever arena that's in, whether it's health and fitness or it's business, whatever it is, but developing leaders. That's my whole deal. I don't know what form that's going to take in the future, but that's what it looks like right now.
I feel that for sure. That's kind of the way I feel, where I'm passionate about people, leadership, and the things of that nature. And it's just trying to figure out what's going to go well with that. And for you, I know you've kind of found your niche in the fitness and health industry. And when you think about Appalachia, Ohio, down on the river, usually you don't think of the healthiest people. Why for you was a health club, a fitness gym, a good start for that?
Yeah, I mean, I started at Ohio University in sociology, and that was one of the things I studied, obviously. So studied culture. And in my time there, I really just wanted to get to the root of what was the difference between us and the rest of the state and just other rural counties. So I looked at a lot of data, and it looked like everywhere else was getting better. Like, yeah, we had the discrepancies that you would expect. You know, I mean, it's no secret rural counties are typically less healthy. They're, you know, more impoverished, things of that nature. But I wanted to know why we weren't getting any better, and some of the other rural counties were. So I dug into that a little bit, dug into some of the culture, and really what it boiled down to for me was, one, our talent always leaves. So anybody that has the skills and the knowledge or the motivation to do something typically goes somewhere else. So there's that piece for me. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stay home. I wanted to be one of the ones that made a change where I'm from, knowing the challenges that were ahead. But in the health space, you know, I believe that your health is the foundation of everything that you do. And it can only make you more effective if you are in better shape, if you have better mental clarity, if you feel extremely confident because you're able to accomplish feats that you otherwise never would have been able to. So things like that just translate so well into whether you're worried about being a great mom or dad, or you're a business leader or whatever it is. It's vitally important. And it'll come knocking on the door regardless whether you pay attention to it or not at some point. And just seeing what was going on in our county, I thought, you know, this might be the root of a lot of our problems, is that, you know, our most basic thing that we could, you know, need to operate on in our health, is just, there's just an all out assault on it from every front, from our medical system, the struggles that we have there, the culture that we have. And that ended up being the big one that I wanted to address was, in starting a health club, like, one, even if you did want to get in shape, you did want to do something health, and you were saying, you know what, I don't want to end up on a lot of prescriptions and dependent on certain things. I want to go do this for myself. And, you know, we honor that, but there's nowhere for them to go at the time. So we opened a health club just out of sheer necessity at first. And also, you know, being in sociology before, I wanted that to be a place to start change the local culture, to make our little corner of the state an anomaly, and make it one of the healthiest places in the entire country, because, you know, we're not supposed to be healthy. We're supposed to be in poverty. We're supposed to be dependent on painkillers and prescriptions and all of these things. And I wanted to do something to start making that go away with the understanding, what we were up against. And luckily we've had tremendous success in business, that has allowed us to kind of push that plan forward a little bit faster. So, when you look at something like that, you're making a 10, 15, 20 year plan. And some of these projects I kind of dreamed up when I was in college, I didn't think was going to be happening. And it looks like they're going to get rolling here in the next year, to 18 months. That's really, I hope, is going to start planting seeds to impact our culture locally. And that was just really where my heart's at. You know, just healing sick people and helping them, live their life to the fullest.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know too, like, with my work with Marley and Only in Appalachia, like, there is a need for that in the region. And part of it too is just that, like, the people down there are like the salt of the earth. They're great people, and yeah, they want to be good. They want to be great, but they're just not quite sure how. They don't have the resources. They don't have the right leaders. And so that's awesome to see someone like you, staying around and not taking your talents elsewhere. So I'm excited to see that for you. So talk about the health club a little. What do you mean by a health club? And what kind of do you have started there, and how did that start?
Yeah. So like I said, I did research for it when I was in college. So that was really the first seed of it. So, you know, I always worked out, you know, it was my favorite thing to do. I was really into just weight training and stuff when I was younger. And I had our high school gyms to go to, which your chances of catching a staph infection or having something fall and break your neck was very, very high, unfortunately. So, because, you know, again, our high schools don't have a lot of money to put into $1 million facilities. You know, we was lucky to get hand-me-downs from OU 20 years ago. We just didn't have anywhere to go. So I wanted to see that happen. You know, just being as a kid, like, I just want somewhere to freaking work out. I don't have to drive 30 minutes away. So it was that piece. But when I was in college, you know, studying all the health data and looking at this and seeing, you know, hey, these numbers are real people, and it's my neighbors. It's and they don't talk about it, obviously, because, you know, it's not something you want to be blasting all over Facebook. But you'd be astounded the number of people that just have a little bit of joint pain that could be fixed, with, you know, maybe correcting their muscle imbalances or just, you know, getting them moving a little bit every day. The amount of pain that people go through, physical pain, that leads them to one, stop moving, which exacerbates their condition and gets worse. And ultimately they end up hooked on painkillers. And that's where, you know, the heroin epidemic and all these, you know, the drugs that flood our community sometimes. Luckily, we all have problems. You know, that's every corner of the state, every city, every rural place. But it does disproportionately affect certain areas of the state. I think we've been lucky in that regard that it hasn't exploded here. But that potential is always there when you have a population that's in chronic pain. So I would see things like that. And it's really, really troubled me knowing that I had the skill and the knowledge to do something about it. And it was almost, you know, like I couldn't not do it. So I started working with a business advisor right out of college after learning all these things. And that was a 2.5 year process. So really, once that seed got planted in me, and I feel like it had been growing for a while, you know, in my younger years, that fire was starting to grow. I wasn't aware that it was there yet. And then once I basically had one of my professors tell me, like, you need to do this, and you have the talents to do so. And that was another thing, was I believed, you know, there's no difference between me and any other billionaire that started a company. Not a lot of times it's work ethic and some self-awareness and some time, you know, consistency over time. So I made that decision that, you know, because before I was like, I'm not a business person. And that's what I told her when she said I needed to meet with a business advisor before I left college. I was like, I'm not a business person. But I kind of made that identity shift that there is no secret sauce. It's just, you can do whatever you decide to do. It takes some self-awareness and work ethic, like I said. So I got that process started. And with my business advisor, you know, we went through, did all of our business planning, did all the legal stuff right. And the big challenge was funding. So I would go into these banks and asking for a lot of money to start a health club in Pomeroy, Ohio. And almost every one of them said the same thing. They said, you're crazy. People around there don't exercise. They don't value their health. The market will not support what you're trying to do. And a lot of them were gracious with me. And they're like, listen, you know, you're a young kid, you're 20 years old. You know, you're working really hard. It'll happen for you one day, just not yet. You know, those things. And I'm like, I don't want to, you know, I'm not waiting 10 years to make this happen. This is a need. It needs to happen right now. And some, you know, some people just wouldn't even take a meeting with me. And it was very discouraging. And ultimately, at the time, I was delivering pizzas. So I was saving every single dollar that I had working on whatever minimum wage for a tipped worker is. It's not very much. You know, driving around my little Hyundai Tiburon all over the county, you know, trying to just get every penny I could to try and fund this thing, and knowing that I was never going to do it myself. I would have had to come to that. But that came into play because my business advisor had met the president of Huntington National Bank, or at least a, you know, there was over a bunch of branches in our local area. And she was telling her our story and just saying, you know, this kid's passionate. He's very intelligent. He really, really cares about his community. He wants to make this happen. He just has so many issues. Because we even got denied by the SBA after working with the SBA and doing their whole process. And they said, you're doing great, jeez, but still no. And luckily, Barb from Huntington Bank, I think it was Parkersburg or Marietta, is once she's over in West Virginia. And she heard my story and she said, he has how much cash in the bank? Like he's 20. He has that much money saved up. You don't do that unless you really, really care about what you're doing. And that ended up being the one thing that kind of proved to them that I was worth taking a chance on. You know, I heard one time my friend, mutual friend of ours, Mr. Matthew Benson, say, you know, speaking of investors, you know, when they know a winner, they know a winner. And I think Barb said, you know, hey, I think this kid's a winner and he's worth taking a chance on. Ultimately, she did. Very grueling renovation process. Had to learn a lot really fast on the fly. That very stressful time. But also, we opened our health club and, you know, feel like I'd reached a mountaintop and realized that I had just made it to base camp. There's a lot of growing and stuff that still needed to be done. But that process really kind of refined me and gave me a lot of the just values and the drive and the passion that made me who I am. So looking back on that, one of the toughest times in my life, just mentally and the amount of stress that we were under. But it was very formative, and I draw on that very often. You know, it's something that doesn't just go away, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But you know, now here we are, 2.5 years later, we've crushed all of our projections. Our community has just welcomed us with open arms. They believe in our mission, and they want to be a part of it, and they're taking part of it. And that's what it takes to make change. And hopefully over the next, you know, 2, 3, 10, 20 years, our home is going to look very, very different because of some of the actions we were able to take.
That's awesome. That's so cool to hear. I love that story. And isn't it kind of funny too when people tell you that you're not going to make it or they don't believe in you and they just might not know anything about your industry or you specifically. Yeah. And then you get that one person that believes in you. And like Matt said, it's about investing in the people, not as much as the product, because the people are what's going to make it happen no matter what. That's sweet. I love that. And your story, what kind of things are you doing in the actual community? Like, I know you guys do a lot of work with the community. What do you got going on there outside of just people coming to lift weights there?
Yeah. So, one of the things we really want to do is start working with the schools, and just change how our school system does things in regard to health. Our school lunch program, if you really understand the human body and, the challenges that face, America at large, when we look at our health data and how sick we are as a country. And then you look how we're exacerbating that through how we feed our children every single day. And obviously the kids who that's the only food that they get that are in poverty, it impacts them even worse because they don't have the choice to bring their lunch to school. I mean, I think a lot of our local schools, it's over 50% of them. I may be wrong on this, but I believe it's a very large amount of them. That school lunch program, getting their free lunch at school, is the only food that they get most days. And the fact that that is what it does to their bodies because of the nutrition in it, it's nothing short of criminal. And we want to see that start to change because we're setting these kids up for failure, even their brain development. I mean, I could talk for hours about how that impacts their success later in life in every single aspect and every avenue. So we want to start doing things like that. And that starts with just talking to the teachers, getting involved in that community, and showing them, hey, we're just here to help. I just want to see our community grow in it and be as healthy as it possibly can be. So working with them, doing just seminars when they have a work day or a waiver day or whatever, coming in and talking to them for an hour, and spending time in my work week to develop a 45 minute talk that I can do to bring incredible value to them, to help maybe change them just a little bit. Maybe that trickles down into the students, and maybe they invite us back and we get to work with them. There's other things like, we work on other projects like with our farmers market, us having a little bit of an audience. Hopefully we can lend that to our farmers market, make it more successful and grow our local economy and help local foods be more available. We live in a food desert. So basically any avenue that we see where there's any need or somebody has any interest. And a lot of times it starts with, hey, our workplace, we got 70 employees here. They're doing a weight loss challenge. Could you come in? Would you be interested in messing with that? And my brain immediately as a fitness professional goes, oh Lord, weight loss challenges are a nightmare. That's terrible for you. But let me go in and entertain this and at least, facilitate something, help them to grow, or maybe see things a little bit different, deliver that paradigm shifting moment. So it's almost like, never saying no to volunteering when somebody asks to help, because I know ultimately when I get in front of people, I have the ability to change their mind about something in the health and fitness space, or at least make them think about it. And if I can do that often enough over the course of a decade, I honestly believe if you're consistent and people see that, they will start to really listen to what you have to say. Because they'll be like, man, when it was year three and they were talking about this, I didn't really believe it. I thought they were just trying to make some money and get me to come work out. But they've been doing this for a decade and their message hasn't changed and they continue to invest in the community. People start to buy in. Our community projects are pretty sporadic. It really is. We'll think something up one day and 2 days later we got posters up promoting it, so
that's awesome.
That's super cool. Another friend of mine launched a project called Lunge Across America that we actually just kind of stole it from him and we participated in it with him last year, and then we're taking it this year, making it our own. And it's
Lunge Across America.
Yeah. So we want to lunge However many miles it is across America, I don't know if it's 5,000 or 3,000 or whatever, have that number, but so we'll lunge a mile. Instead of doing like a 5K, we do a mile of lunges, and we do it as a group. It's not a race. And what we do is every person that does that with us, whether they walk most of it or they do lunge the whole thing, we count them as a mile. And it's a chronic disease awareness thing. So one of the things we say is, hey, you were probably really uncomfortable while you're doing that, right? Your legs were on fire. That really sucked. Well, that's what people go through every day in chronic pain, and with chronic disease, it's miserable. And that's why we're doing this, to raise awareness about it. And then we talk about, the ways that we're trying to remedy that. But the other thing is like, obviously we're not going to get 3,000 people. I don't even know how many, that's like a half of our county, that's going to come out and do that, but it's every year continuing to fight that fight. And we're adding to that total every single year to say that, this isn't a goal that's going to be achieved right away. It's something that's going to take a community effort year over year, consistently over time, and going through discomfort in the name of somebody else, to do something to help somebody else. And it's such a powerful event. It's also a lot of fun because people are falling over left and right because their legs are on fire. But it's an absolute blast. And if anybody's around the state or wherever listening, you're close enough to drive, we do that every June. That out on Facebook, connect with us. It is an absolute blast. It's a good time.
So you talk a lot about working with the community, helping the community. And I gotta ask, because I know you're the vice president of your local chamber. How did that come about? I mean, you're 24 years old and vice president of the chamber.
Yeah, well, it's not as glorious as it sounds. Our chamber, I will say, I do have to give kudos to our local chamber, the work that they've done over the last 3-4 years, the changes that they have made, is the potential they have created, let's say that, with what they've done in the last couple of years has been phenomenal. And it seems like, to me, they were hitting a couple of roadblocks. So I got brought on. Had a couple board members, their time was up. They had a couple seats open. And I had a few friends on the board that said, hey, Chase is pretty talented. He's right around the corner pretty much. Let's bring him on, and it is one of those things. I'll be completely honest. At the time, I was probably just the person that would say yes. There was nothing special, but they weren't like, oh my gosh, let's go get Chase. I'd like to think that they did that, but I would say it was more, hey, we need to fill this seat. Nobody wants to take it. I bet Chase will. He does this stuff all the time. So, and I did, and I said yes, and I was incredibly excited about it because I absolutely love doing those sorts of things. So I was able to leverage my knowledge about communications and messaging and marketing, and start to run every single thing we do at the chamber through that filter. I did that for the first 6 months that I was there, and in that process, everybody said, not necessarily that, hey, you're the smartest person in the room, you should be the VP, or you're the best looking, whatever, I don't know. But they pretty much just said, obviously you're invested. I think my passion for our community kind of showed through a little bit. And I think that's mainly what people saw. But I was also kind of in a lucky situation. Like I said, they created potential. They did all the work. Everybody that came before me put us in this position to where we're one unlock away from massive change and massive progress. I just happen to have that key in the communications and messaging arena. So everybody else there has so many other skills in so many other areas. They were just missing that one piece to connect that with our community and their members and things of that nature. So that has been really cool to be able to come on and serve on that board as well, and have another avenue where it's not our audience at the health club. It's the community at large now, to be able to interact with them and invest in our leaders and our entrepreneurs through those avenues in the chamber as well. That has been, outstanding. It's something I really, really enjoy doing.
Do you have an example of something that you were able to change? Like maybe there's some other people out there that are part of their local chambers or local communities. What's something that you have an example of that you change?
Yeah. So when we first came in, when you're a nonprofit or a chamber in specific, typically you have something like bylaws or a governing document that you have to go by. It doesn't have to be anything specific. It just, the state requires that those are there. So that's what you get handed when you're a new board member, as, you know, hey, here's our governing documents, kind of like your constitution. You know, you need to know this because you're a lawmaker pretty much. And you had to abide by these things as well, as a board member. So reading through that, I read it and I went, I don't know what most of the stuff means. And of course, you know, we're all like, well, that's because you're new. It's like, well, new people should be able to understand it. It should be that clear. So that was the first thing I started with. And it was just our communication structure internally. So we went through, really combed through that, and was like, you know, guys, we just don't know whose job is what. Everybody wants to do things. We have phenomenal people. Everybody here is talented, but we just never do what we're supposed to do because we don't know who's supposed to do it, because there's no structure into our chamber quite yet. It was kind of there, but it was very foggy. So we just kind of lifted the fog a little bit. You know, our committee, it wasn't myself, it was our whole committee, you know, rewrote a large portion of those. We all brainstormed. We spent well over a month on that. And that allowed us to get our house in order. And out of that, then we started looking at our services. And I took our services list and I asked the question every single time, if I'm a business owner, how does this help me thrive and survive? And if I couldn't answer that question, or that answer to that question wasn't clear, that service was something that we're wasting time and effort on. It's a good thing. And that's when if anybody's working with a nonprofit, you will do things that are just good things and you do them because of that reason, but they may not have a place in your nonprofit. So being our local chamber, we're the go-to for everything. And we tend to not say no to things. And that's really hard when you're a nonprofit. You know, if you're a church or you're a student organization or whatever, people think you should be doing it because, right, you're a nonprofit. That's what nonprofits do. I don't know. So yeah, being able to say no to certain things and get your services in order and be effective at what you do, rather than being all over the place and barely, you know, being effective when really you could have a large impact if you just focus. So that's kind of where we started with all that. And now starting to do some more messaging on behalf of our members and promoting tourism in the county, because, man, it makes counties awesome. We just don't talk about it very well is a lot of times the issue. So
yeah,
really just kind of get your house in order, make sure everybody's clear on what their job is. And then make sure your community is very, very clear on what you do and what you don't do. And you'll be surprised the success you have out of that.
Yeah. So you're running this successful health club now. You're the vice president of your chamber, changing things there, getting the house in order. And you got a lot going on. You just got married. You have a wife now.
Yeah.
What is the thought process on starting two new businesses right now? Because to me, that bored, seems man. Like a lot.
You start to get a little success and you want a little more. Honestly, our health club is something that's super long term. And we tend to invest in things that maybe don't make business sense, but they make sense from changing our community in that perspective. So that's not to say if you're a mission minded person to not be financially responsible. We have a bottom line that we never dip under. There's certain things that we won't sacrifice. We have to be excellent at running a business, especially in our industry, but that's in it. You know, any business person, you just have to be really, really good at understanding business and all those things. So we don't sacrifice those things, but sometimes there's things where if you're just like, if profit is your number one goal, you wouldn't make that decision. And that's what we say is profit isn't our number one goal. Helping people is. It's number two, right? So it's still there, but that's kind of a long-term game, and that's not something where we're going to get rich off of. You know, I believe honestly, if you invest in people for long enough, if you're able to stick around for 10 years, you will see those payoffs. But you know, again, that's not what we're after now. We still have to have an income though, right? You know, I had holes in my shoes for almost 3 years and have worn hand-me-downs for almost a decade to be able to do what we are now. You know, and at some point you say, you know, hey, I would like to have a new pair of jeans once in a while and not have to worry about putting gas in my truck. So that comes into play a little bit, but then when we learned so much about marketing and messaging, it and how it radically transformed our business, I thought, man, there's so many people just in my local community, let alone the state or the country abroad, that really care about what they do. They really believe that what they're doing is making a difference. Even if it's selling clothes, they're providing a place where locally you can come in and you just, you know, it's an enjoyable experience that adds to your local culture. And that's so, so important. And there's so many people out there that have those skills and they're really good at what they do at their trade or their craft, but they just don't understand the messaging piece. And you can be great at what you do, but if nobody knows you're doing it, you're not going to be very successful. So you have to connect to people. So we're like, you know what? We're good at this. There's a need for it, especially locally. And the more we interact with even larger companies that normally I would be a little intimidated by, hearing the way they talk about marketing, messaging, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, even at this level, there's still a need. So that's where we decided to begin working on our marketing agency and getting things in order to launch that, which is hopefully going to be very, very soon, a couple of weeks even. So that was, again, just filling a need, seeing people that are doing great things and wanting to help them, whether it's a nonprofit or a business, whatever. But we believe that if you confuse, you lose, and a clear message is the best way to grow your business. So if your customer is confused on how you help them thrive and survive, then you're probably going to fail, or you're definitely not going to capitalize on your potential. And if you're good at what you do, you have a lot of potential. So we want to unlock that and help just all these middle-class people, these small to medium-sized companies that are doing great things, have even more resources to do what they do and just focus on doing what they do. So that's where kind of that grew out of. And then seeing our health club grow to where it's self-sustaining to a point and being able to grow a team there very soon to where I can step away more and can do more of another passion of mine, which is communications. So, and then my wife, she loves baking and decided to start an e-com business, Mad Batter Cookies, where she makes giant gourmet cookies and sends them all over the United States. So that was just more of a, hey, I can do this. I'm good at it. I'd rather do this than my day job. And she went for it, and she's more successful than I have in their first week, you know. So it's just a blast, man. It's, you know, being an entrepreneur is when you have certain skills and you can create something and nothing. Again, I'm a creator. I'm an artistic person. You know, being able to create something out of thin air that people find value in, it's almost nothing short of magical. So we just love doing it. Hopefully we stop at three. I don't think that's going to be a very long time before we do anything else other than maybe some volunteer stuff. So, but yeah, man, it's the spice of life. It's a good time.
Yeah. That's awesome too, because a lot of people talk about like working in something you love. And when you get out of school, like you have to do something you love. Don't stick to one accounting desk job for 40 years. And so it's cool to hear stories of people kind of combining their passions and being okay with one, taking risk and putting that on their back, but also bringing together what they're passionate about. And for you, it's people and health. And so it's really cool to see that, because on the other side of things, you could have just gotten a great job out of college, maybe in Columbus as an accountant working, or you did marketing. So working with a marketing firm, but to see you kind of come back home and begin to transform that community with what you're good at and what you're passionate about, I think is awesome. And I know for that community, it's going to take a team too. And you can use your skills there in marketing and health and fitness, but there's also going to have to be other aspects that are going to be added in. So you're grooming those people as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why I think that's awesome. And so you've got all these things now that you're doing. Where is the balance there between life and work and being there for your wife? How have you kind of navigated that balance?
Well, one, I will say that, you know, having a wife that is an entrepreneur in spirit as well, and also believes in our vision herself, is paramount. I don't think we'd be where we are if she wasn't there by my side and fully 100% bought in. I don't think I even would have went for it in the first place if she, again, when you're starting something, when you're an entrepreneur, everybody's going to doubt you. Your mom, your brother, your sister is probably going to say you're crazy. Even if they don't say it, they may believe it. It's you have to have that vision and passion there So having her by my side, kind of steadfast, allowed me to always have something to fall back on, no matter what, even when I started doubting myself a little bit. So that is paramount in itself. However, that being said, your balance does not exist when you're a startup. That's if you want balance and you want to own your own business, good luck, is all I had to tell you. Yeah. And that's where self-awareness comes in. When you're an entrepreneur, or you know, you're a leader in any capacity, you have to understand where you're at. You know, when we talk to like local business owners, for example, or people who are thinking about branching out and starting their own thing, and they're like, "Well, you did this, right? You know, this is what you did." I'm like, "Listen, man, I had no house, no kids, I had nothing to lose. You have those things. Understand it's going to be a more stressful process for you, because if you're putting something up, you have a lot to lose. You know, if my stuff went through, I just had a bill to pay back over the course. You know, I didn't have any student debt. So I was like, whatever, here's my student debt if I have to pay this back, if things go under." So self-awareness is key, and also understanding, you know, maybe you're not going to be a millionaire because you don't want to do what it takes. And that's okay. You know, I think it's amazing when people are like, "I want to start my own business, make about $50,000 a year and work 30 hours a week and spend more time with my kids. You know, I don't want to be Mark Cuban." You know, I think that is absolutely incredible. And that's all we could ever ask for people. So for me, it's a continual process of trying to be self-aware, and gain some perspective and understand when my, feelings are shifting and when my perspective is shifting, and maybe checking that sometimes. And, am I buying into popular culture too much? Am I allowing, the glitz and the glam to catch my eye a little bit? Is that distracting me from my mission? Because things like that won't drive you. And that's really the key, is when you first get started, if you don't have a lot of passion and a lot of gratitude, you're not going to make it in the long haul. You have to have compassion for people, and you have to really, really love what you do. You have to have so much gratitude that one person will take the time out of their day to listen to your podcast, to follow you on social media. The fact that they would do that for you, of all people, there's a little humility there as well, is insane. And when you come from that perspective, the value you'll provide is phenomenal. And then the 80-hour work weeks don't seem so insane then. So having those understandings, and they suck. Let's be honest, working 80 hours a week for 3 years in a row, 4 years in a row, really is not fun. But you also can stop doing that at any time, but you don't, because you believe so much in what you do. So when we talk about balance, I mean, that's just all. Balance is really relative, if you ask me. For me, 40 hours a week is not balanced. That is not something I ever really want to do right now, because my hobby is you know, what I love to do is helping people. And if I'm just sitting at home, you know, playing Xbox, I do a lot of that right now. But if I just, you know, say, "Hey, I'm going to take that extra 20 hours a week I work, and I'm just going to hang out, serve myself, spend some money, whatever," I couldn't live with it. That's just not who I am. Yeah. Now, you may be somebody else who's a little bit different, and that's totally okay. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, don't buy into this narrative that being an entrepreneur means you're nose to the grindstone 24/7. You have to make a bunch of sacrifices and do all these things if you don't want to. That doesn't mean you're going to be really, really, really successful. It means you're going to be less successful. But if you understand that and you say, "Hey, that's okay. That's what I want," then that's awesome. That's super awesome. So balance for us just looks a little different. And I think that's honestly
with your 80 hour work weeks, I'm sure that sometimes you have those points where you might get a little burnt out. And,
oh yeah.
And that's where you have those people in your corner. You're married to your best friend, and you can come home and you have those people that can help you get through that.
Absolutely. And work
through that you're comfortable being around, and that push you to be better as well.
And I will say, we've shifted too. So like, 8 hours a week was the first, you know, the renovation process in the first year and a half. Now it looks more like 60, because I was like, "Hey, I'm tired of that. I want to spend more time at home with my wife. I'm ready to step back a little bit." And I have. Now, let's say our marketing agency takes off and I'm like, "This is a blast. I want to do this 24/7 every single day." That'll change. And that's okay. It's important to understand that as well.
And because of the processes that you've been putting in place over the last few years by working 80 hours a week, you're able to take a step back from the health club and, and put that time into something else because of what you've already built.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just patience. You know, do what it takes a lot longer than you think, whatever you're planning on doing. The reason why people are successful is 100 people want to do the same thing that you're doing, and 100 people start, and 2 weeks later, 50 of them drop off, and 2 years later, 95 of them drop off. Now there's a pool of 5 of you. If you're a little bit talented, guess what? Now you win over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. And that wasn't the, out of those 100 people, I guarantee those people that were 10 times more talented than you, but you had the confidence, the self-awareness, the gratitude to keep going, and now you win. That equation is not complex at all.
That's awesome. Well, I love your story, Chase. To wrap up a little bit here, give me a book that might have changed your life. Ooh. Or changed the way you think about life. What for you has been the biggest book that's impacted you?
So that's a tough one. So like business-wise, it was Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. And I say that because I'm a Story Brand certified guide. So I'm going to cash in if you buy that book probably and you find me. and honestly, that's why we did that, is because it was so impactful for us. So that was one of my favorite ones, you know, just business wise. Most of anything entrepreneurial or business wise and me came from podcasts and things of that nature. So reading wise, I'm not as heavy a reader as I should be. But honestly, man, when it comes to life, I haven't read anything, I think, honestly, that has radically shifted my view on things other than the Bible. I know that's not for, everybody, yeah. But the truth is the church.
Pretty
was
popular
what,
book.
Yeah. I think some people have heard of it. But there's nothing other than the church that has formed how I think and how I go about what I do. I talked to you a couple of days ago about, when you start and you're 24 and you're vice president of your local chamber and you walk in and people are like, they look at you to listen to you. It's like, it kind of scares you a little bit. And you're like, man, should I go somewhere else? Maybe where I feel like I'm a little bit smaller fish, you know, cause it's intimidating. So I have our pastor, Jason Simpkins, to look up to, who has been in those situations himself as a young man. And there's not a lot of people like that locally. One, just because we're smaller, there's not a lot of people in general. But that organization, and then obviously, my daily reading there is, that's what drives, who I am. If you want to talk about who Chase is as that's a person, awesome. That's it, man.
That's where the foundation starts and is built upon. That's sweet. And then my last question I always ask is to you, what does success look like? Kind of when you're looking back, either at the end of your life or maybe in 10 years, what do you feel like it's going to mean for you to be successful?
Yeah. So business-wise, I want to have an impact on the people I care about in the communities that I serve. It has nothing to do with a dollar amount. Those things are required to have that impact. But when we talk about any organization that I'm a part of, I want it to change people's minds and make people better people, or help them do better what they already do, or are good at. I just want to make people happy people and passionate people, that have a ton of joy. And whether that's distracting from or taking away from maybe some of the suffering in their health, or helping them grow their business faster and really enjoy it more because they're up against fewer things with their communications. So we just want to have an impact on people. Personally, I want to be able to do whatever I want to do. That's how I define success. And if that is work 40 hours a week or 20 hours a week when I have kids and be with them, I want to have mobility. To do what I want to do in life, and understanding that now. I still live in reality, right? Still know I'm going to have bills to pay. So I take a grand view of that every once in a while and look at the next 5-10 years and say, what do I need to do now to make sure that I can do what I want to do pretty much and be mobile in the future. So success for me is being able to serve where I'm needed. And be able to, at the end of the day, not have too many, you know, people with the keys to my life in their hands and be able to hold those myself.
I love that, man. That's awesome. That's sweet. So where can people find you now? If someone wants to connect with you, follow you online, social media wise, where can people find you at?
Yeah. So if you want to follow me personally, I'm mainly just really salty and sassy about health stuff. So if you want to hear me make fun of multi-level
marketing
companies.
Wasn't your post yesterday literally about salt?
Yeah. Yeah. It was literally a very salty post. I'm very countercultural in the fitness space because it's very needed. So there's a lot of stuff on that there. Our health club is at Uplift Fitness Ohio on Instagram or Uplift Fitness on Facebook. And then I'm T_Jenkins14, I believe, on Instagram. But my wife is probably the one that everybody wants to follow because her business is much more fun than all the heavy stuff that we talk about, Mad Batter Cookie Company. You can check her out too. And then I wish I had a handle to give you for the Jenkins group, for our marketing agency, but like I said, taking our time, being patient with it. So it'll be a couple of weeks, but we'll be sure to have that out here in a couple of weeks as well.
Explode out of the gates. That's awesome.
I hope so.
Absolutely. Well, guys, go follow Chase on social media, follow his wife, follow their companies. They've got big things coming and I'm excited to be there for it, to watch it grow and see what happens. So thanks, Chase.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Man, what an unbelievable and inspiring story. And he's only 24. The ability to stay in his hometown and help build that gives him so much respect coming from me. So go check him out on social media, check his wife Maddie out, and be sure to follow along with their story and their businesses and what they're doing down there in Appalachia. I know there are big things coming for them and Meigs County, so I'm definitely excited to follow along. Go give the Uncovering Success podcast a like and review as well. Your feedback is extremely helpful and appreciative. And thank you for coming along with me on my journey of uncovering success.